G'day everybody and welcome to the Down at the Centre Migrating to Australia podcast. My name's Wes Zant and I'm joined by Alison Bolton and Lisa Chambers. Ladies, welcome.
Hello.
So, Alison, we've got you here. You're currently in Queensland. You've been here for 6 months. Yeah. And we were talking about just before we started recording, this is our five-year anniversary. Is that correct?
Yeah, I met you and Jenny 5 years ago this month.
5 years. And is Justin still the same? Big beard, bald?
Yep, for sure. Yep.
Yep. Still handsome as always.
Yep.
That's our guy. So, guys, we had the pleasure of meeting Alison and Justin at an event at an expo that we're involved in. It's nice, Alison, to sort of get to meet you guys at that point. And who would have thought 5 years later? That's a long time. 5 years later, you're now sitting in sunny Queensland. I'm sitting in Victoria, and we're having a chat over a podcast.
Yeah, I know. It's quite surreal, actually. But, yeah, it's great.
It is. It is. So Queensland's a big place. Whereabouts in Queensland are you?
We're on the Gold Coast.
On the Goldie. And first thoughts of the Gold Coast?
It's getting hot, stunning beaches, and we've got the mountains as well and the rainforest, like literally one way and the beach is the other. Yeah, it's pretty surreal, to be honest, because I've never been to Australia before, so I didn't have any expectations. But, yeah, it's pretty cool.
You know, it's quite a common theme, these people heading to Australia that have never been here before. It's so interesting. Some people, you know, try before they buy, I guess, and have a bit of a recce, as they call it, Alison, and spend lots of money coming to visit. And it's one of those questions. You know, do you spend usually the money people spend on coming to Australia on a holiday and seeing if they like it for a couple, you know, for a month, a few weeks, whatever it is usually the cost of what the visa is going to cost them. So I don't know if it's right or wrong. I guess, you know, some people say, yes, we really made the right choice by doing that. And other people like yourself and Justin just jump in it and get here. So I really want to, you know, you've been here for 6 months. You're in the Gold Coast. Let's backtrack a little bit. So Justin was the main applicant for the visa, correct?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
Yep. And what's his occupation?
He is classed as a fitter general.
Yeah, perfect. In Australia. And when you guys started with us, you would have had the old Down Under Centre box with the folder in it, did you?
Yeah, we've still got it.
Still got it. Legends. Yep. Yeah, my wife, actually, I've kept some when I've shipped them over here. And my wife was like, we need to throw some stuff away. I'm like, you can't throw them away. They're memories. But, yeah, all right. So you had the old the paper-based submission, I guess, with us. How was it? Was it challenging doing it that way?
Not really, because when we first met you, it was pretty straightforward when you and Jenny went through everything on the sheet of what the process is, so the stages of understanding how many points we needed, what we needed to do when we got the points, the skills assessment. So we knew a bit about it. We knew we had to get a certain amount of points and the trade had to be on the skills list. But then we didn't realise that there was everything else involved, like the English test and the skills assessment and how long this process takes. So by you guys going through all that and showing us that the flow of what we needed to do in the stages was brilliant. And at that point, because it was so straightforward how you explained it, we were like, right, we feel confident going with you guys that this is what we want to do. And then when we made that decision, you sent us the box and basically said, these are the stages you need to do it in. This is what you need to do. If you've got any questions, please call us, which was great because as we now know, and probably lots of people listening to this will know if they're at our stage or a bit further on, it is massively overwhelming of what you need to collate and the information that you need just to go through each stage. So for you to give us the folder in the box with the guide of, right, this is what you do at this stage. Any questions, give us a call. We couldn't have asked for any more.
Well, you know, now we do it online. We have what we call as the client portal, and it's really cool because it's like a message system. So if you've got if it's 9 o'clock at night and you're in the UK, the Aussie team can even pick it up if someone has a question. So it just speed things up. Alison, where are you from?
Originally near Manchester.
So near Manchester. So are you a northerner? Is that what you referred to?
Yeah, that's me, a northerner, yeah.
Yeah, because you say now a little bit funny, a little bit different.
Yeah, I'm finding that lots of people where I work don't really understand what I'm saying. So
I understand.
I changed my accent a little bit.
I really like it. We actually did quite a few shows down. Well, we did one in Manchester, the Victoria Warehouse. Do you know where that is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did an event there. That was awesome. Did you guys go to that event? That was that was just before the pandemic.
No, because I come from near Manchester, but we actually live near Southampton.
Okay.
So we were always closer to you guys in London.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, excellent. All right. So, how did it go? Was Justin hands-on with getting the documents, or was that your part mainly, Alison, for the skills assessment and visa?
That was my part. So Justin just did what I asked him to do because he's definitely he's the maintenance guy, loves tinkering with engines and anything mechanical. So then it was down to me to do the administration part. So we just did it together, really. I did all the admin bit, looking through the folder, this is what we need. And then he'd go off and get the videos and the photos for the portal. At the time, the Duck employment
hub. Oh, for the employment hub.
Yeah, so he uploaded all his videos and photos to that, and then he submitted them to you guys ready for the skills assessment. And then he just basically he jumped through the hoops when I presented him with all the information of what we needed. So I did all the administration bit, really.
Yeah. Now, that's good. We talk about this on lots of podcasts, and I think it's good to sort of understand a little bit about people's journey and everything like that. So, all right, skills assessment done. He did his English test. How did he go with his English test?
Yeah, hated it. He had to do 5 of them.
Yep.
Because he tried the IELTS first, wasn't really comfortable with the whole handwriting, speaking to a person face-to-face when he was doing the speaking part. So he opted to then change to the PTE. And he was always getting the lower level, but because of our age, he had to try and get the full, I think it's superior in the marks, the highest marks you can get on the English, to try and get his points for the 190 at the time we were going for. So he did about 4 PTEs and an IELTS, and he was always getting the lower level marks. And then unfortunately in November 19, a year after we started, the Australians changed the skills list and the 190 was taken off the table for us for that particular trade as a fitter. So Jenny then said the only option you have is the new 491 visa, which she said, you've got enough points for that already without doing a high score English test. So we did 5, Justin did 5 English tests unnecessarily, but we didn't know that at the time. That's just how it panned out.
Yeah, so, our friends at immigration like to move the goalposts. Good on him though, Alison. Like, what drove him to do it 5 times if he's never been here?
No, he's been here on a working holiday visa before, so he'd been to Sydney.
Okay.
That was 15 years ago now, but we knew it was to do with the age. So obviously the older you get, you lose points. And we weren't in a position to go in 2018 when we started, because I was in the army. So we knew we couldn't go till 2020 anywhere. And you and Jenny had said, well, it'll take approximately 2 years to get your visa, because that's just how long the process can take.
Yeah.
So we knew that. And he's not, he has a massive fear of like academic stuff, probably like lots of skilled guys do, with the hands-on roles. He's not an academic type guy. He's not, he can read and write, but he's just not an academic person, and he had a massive fear of it all. So we had to do tons of revision. And it was this was the driving factor now. So we'd got his skills assessment. We'd done everything we could. It was just getting these extra points to get that 190. So we had to keep doing it. And he kept doing it. And then we got the last one he did, he was actually 1 mark off. And that was pretty soul destroying for him. So we got it reassessed, remarked. But they didn't change the score. So we paid to get it remarked and they just said, no, we're not changing it. It's staying the same. And then the rules changed anyway. So you can imagine our frustration, because that's not just about him doing the test. That cost like over £1,000 just to do those tests alone.
Yeah.
But when I see people on the Down Under Centre Facebook group, you know, losing, you know, the will to live with the English test, you've just got to keep, if you have to do it, you'll just keep trying and doing it and you will succeed. It's just keep going, but it can be disheartening. So we did get there eventually.
Good work. Well, you know, it's hard, and because as tradespeople, we generally don't read and write as much as people in offices, and therefore we sort of, you know, lose that bit of confidence and get a little bit worried. And it's interesting, you know, some people I'll speak to, I think, oh, they might struggle with the English test. They come back and nail it, and other people I'm quite confident with can come back with a lower score than what we first thought. So the listeners out there, you know, reading, writing, speaking and listening, it's not teaching you how to read, write, speak and listen again. It's teaching you how to pass the exam. We've got tutors and all that that can support clients. But Alison, so we've chatted about the skills assessment. Did you come down with him? He would have sat his technical interview with us in London?
Yes, he did. He came to you guys in London to do one part of it, I think. And then I remember him having a Zoom meeting with a guy over here in Australia at the time, because it was done by Zoom, I think, or Teams.
Is this where the pandemic was on?
No, this was before. I remember him having an interview with someone from Australia at the time, and I remember him coming to you guys. So it was just before, it was in 2019.
Okay, I reckon what we would have done like a pre-assessment for him.
Yes, I think that's what
probably
it was,
just got one of our assessors to have a bit of a chat with him and just, you know, make it, I guess, take the pressure off a little bit, because it's so hard and there's so much, like, you've got the financial pressure as well, haven't you? As you mentioned, everything costs money with all the fees and that immigration charge, and you want to just get it right. Because I do remember, like it's funny, because you guys would have attended when the pandemic was on, you guys would have attended our trivia nights and all that?
Yes, we did in January 2020. We came to the one in January, and that was fantastic, yeah. And then little did we all know that about 7 weeks later we would go into lockdown.
Yeah.
That was so
fun back then, before lockdown. How good was it, getting all the clients?
Yeah, it was. It was brilliant. It was fantastic.
Getting dressed up, and we had a fancy dress and the photo. I remember we had the photo booth. It's I've actually got the iPad that my kids use at the moment, which was the iPad that was used on that night, and the photos are all saved from when we had like all the, you know, the clients dress up. It's quite, I might even try to see if I can find you there. All right, so we're here now. You're in Queensland, but let's go. There's obviously a few things that happened before then. So you're on the Goldie at the moment. You've been here for, 6 months now?
Yeah, nearly 6 months, yeah.
Yep, nearly 6 months. You have never been to Australia. Justin came on a working holiday visa. Who was the driver for it? Who came up with the idea of let's move to Oz?
So we both did, because Justin and I met in 2012, and I basically said to him, my dream has always been to go to Australia. I just never had the opportunity because I joined the army when I left school. And then he told me that he'd literally come back from Australia a few years earlier after being on a working holiday visa. So we both shared the same dream, which probably made it a lot easier for us, because we don't have the conflicting views of I want to stay with my family and he wants to go, or vice versa. And because we don't have children, there is just us and a dog. So it was that made it all pretty easy in that sense.
Okay. And you use the word easy. So it was an easy decision, because both people in the relationship wanted to move to Australia. Let's talk about the moment the visa gets granted. How did that happen? How were you informed that that your visa was granted, and when was that?
So we lodged our visa in March 2020, just before, a week before lockdown occurred for COVID. We, at the time, the 491 was new, and we thought we'd be getting it in a few months. And obviously, like many people, we didn't think COVID would go on as long as it did. We then got the grant on the 29th of September last year. So 29th of September 2022. We got the grant. So that's 2.5 years after we lodged. And we were actually on holiday in Croatia at the time, and Jenny called us. So I knew that Jenny had made the call. Justin missed the call, But I knew as soon as he said, I've got to take this call, Jenny's called, I knew what it was. So yeah, we knew, you know, that was it. And it's hard to explain because I think I had this expectation of, you know, being super happy, which don't get me wrong, we were obviously, but I think for us, it was more the feeling of immense relief and the weight had lifted that 100%. We now had the golden ticket basically to leave our life in the UK to go and start a new life in Australia. So yeah, the weight lifted. It was unbelievable. Yeah. Yeah.
Cause Alison, you know, for people, for our clients who have been with us for a while, and you know, we've got lots and lots of clients, and we've had them for, you know, for a while. And I think lots of the podcasts we do, unfortunately, that the word pandemic probably gets mentioned in nearly all of them, but that was the reality of the time. And but yeah, you're being someone who's been really helpful to others on, yeah, you know, on the social media groups and everything, on our group and that as well. So, you know, thanks for that. But you've got quite a few friends within the Downer to Centre migration community. So yeah, you were able to communicate with lots of Down Under Centre clients, take advice and, you know, and I guess form friendships. But from you're in Croatia, you get the visa granted, 8 months later, you sort of end up in Australia. How is that journey from getting the visa granted to the day you got on the flight? I'm going to try and break down your journey for the listeners, because I know that you've got a few things to add for when people get here and, you know, how to manage their expectations. So
yeah,
from when you got the amazing call from our amazing Jenny to getting the visa, what were you doing? Like, were you organising shipping? What were you doing?
Yeah, it was crazy. So we'd obviously come then back off holiday, and then we just like got into it knowing that it was imminent when we were going to go. But this was all then based around our dog, because we didn't want to leave the country leaving our dog behind. We wanted the dog to leave us with us at the same time as us. Now, we then teamed up with Pets Abroad UK, one of your partners. We'd already dealt with Andre, because a lot of the work that we were doing with you guys happened before COVID. So we'd already contacted PSS and other shippers to get quotes in 2020. We'd already spoke to Andre at Pets Abroad because our old dog was meant to come with us. And there was lots of things we'd already put in place pre-COVID, because we were ready to go the moment we had the visa in 2020, but that didn't happen. So September came, 2022, we've now got the visa. So we then got back in touch with everyone, got back in touch with PSS, got a new quote, got some other quotes. Then we touched base with Andre, who was amazing, because the rules on quarantine for animals has changed. So we had to try and get that sorted. And it was just in stages up until that point. Everything was based around the dog. But everything up until that point, we just did it in stages. So we knew we had to sort our belongings out and just basically filter through all our things to get rid of things and get things ready for shipping. Then we had to get our house ready to rent in the UK, because we have our house being rented out in the UK. So we had to start that again. Then we had to go through the process of getting the dog in the vets to get the vet checks done. So it was pretty crazy. And I was waiting to have surgery on one of my arms at that point. So I lost my right arm for about 6 weeks during this entire process. Whilst Justin was away working, it was pretty mental.
Yeah.
It's like a blur. It was like, I can't even explain it really, and I'm sure there's lots of people in that same position, because there's so many things to do. And when people ask you questions about what you need to do, it's this entire process from start to finish of everything is unique to you.
100%.
We might have the same visa number, we might have the same skill or trade, we might be the same without children, with a dog, but not everybody's situation is the same. Everybody's process is unique to them, irrespective of what visa you're on and where you're going. It's all unique.
Yeah, there's a lot of generalizing. I don't even know how to say that word, Alison, but on the you know, on social media and all that stuff, because people think, oh, I'm an electrician, what do I do, how do I do it, and everything. Yeah. It's so different. It doesn't wind me up, but I just think, geez, some people are giving some advice that's just totally wrong. Yeah. And people are I'm different to Lisa. I'm different to Ayla. I'm different to you. You're different to all these other people. We're all so different, and how we want to do things and what our values are and what we, what's important for other people. So, I mentioned earlier for you, you're happy to sort of, spend lots of money on getting visas and all that sort and come to Australia and give it a crack. And other people want to go on holidays and do it. It's just so different. So I'm happy that you put that in there. But let's get on to we'll go back one more time. So your dog, what sort of breed of dog do you have?
Yeah, she's an English Bull Terrier. But they've got funny names for them here in Australia because they're quite rare. So apparently they're called a Roman nose.
Okay.
Which is different. But yeah, it's an English Bull Terrier.
And being a Bull Terrier, was there extra concern bringing them into Australia?
No. So we actually had another English Bull Terrier who was meant to come with us in 2020. She had her permit. Andre got her permit. She was ready to fly. She'd done the rabies process and then COVID happened and sadly she died in August 21. And then we rehomed another English Bull Terrier last year. And she's older as well. They were both older. But no, there were... The only thing to do with her, because she's a bull breed, she had to have a special crate made, a reinforced crate. But that was all left to Andre because I wanted to make sure that when we did this process, it was right. Because this was the one part, and this was probably more important to us than the actual visa. Because if this goes wrong and the dog can't get into the country or the dog's stuck at quarantine, that could have been like pretty disastrous.
Alison, what's the dog's name?
She's called Cleo.
Cleo, nice.
Yeah.
And how old's Cleo?
Cleo is 10 in January.
And the life expectancy for that breed of dogs is how old?
Between 10 and 12.
Between 10 and 12.
Yeah, between 10 and 12. But Doris, who was meant to come with us in 2020, she got to 13. Yep. These were the discussions that I have with the vet before she was flying, because other people who are emigrating with dogs will know this, that she has to be fit to fly. So they wouldn't, if the vet didn't think she was fit enough to fly, they wouldn't have agreed to sign the paperwork off. So,
how does the vet establish if Cleo's fit to fly?
So they have to do a series of vet checks, and it starts with the rabies vaccination. So you have to have the rabies vaccination done, and you've got to make sure their annual vaccinations are up to date. But this is where, when we used an agent, they give you all these instructions, a bit like you guys with us with the visa. You gave us the clear instructions of what we needed to do at that time. So we had to make sure everything was done within specific timeframes to fit the criteria of the Australian Agriculture Department. So we did all that, and then if she passes the rabies test, then we can move forward to the next stage. And then they're basically just checking for the general health of the dog. You know, she does have long-term health conditions, but they're being managed with medication, very similar to humans with health conditions who go for the medical. You know, as long as everything is managed and she's healthy to fly, then she will, she got on the flight and she flew from Heathrow the same day we did.
Yeah, that's so good. And Claire, when she arrived, was she bubbling? Was she excited to see you? Was it, I guess it would be a pretty big, how long were you actually, you arrived on the same flight, did you say?
No, so what happened was we were quite fortunate because as the rules were changing for quarantine, our permit had already been granted about 3 weeks before the government decided to change the rules. However, in January last year, I think it was this year actually, January this year, the government changed the rules and said that your dog will have to do 30 days quarantine instead of 10. But we'd already been granted the permit. So this caused a lot of issues with obviously thousands of people importing their animals. And then the government backtracked. Anyone who already had the permit issued at that point, they said that we could still do 10 days. So Cleo flew from Heathrow on the same day as us, but we flew to Brisbane via Singapore and she flew to Melbourne via Qatar. So she went to Melbourne on her own and then she was flown from Melbourne up to Coolangatta on the Gold Coast 10 days later.
Okay. And Cleo's like, and the dogs are adjusted? Do you reckon it knows the difference?
Yeah, for sure. So she adjusted a lot quicker than I thought she would. I think she was a bit stressed out after the flight. She's an older girl, and she obviously doesn't know what's going on, but which all animals will do, which must be quite stressful for them. But I think my experience of the process, that was probably the most worrying part for me, was her on the flight, just making sure she got here okay. I was contacted by Pets Abroad UK when she got here, and then quarantine contacted me to let me know she'd arrived. And then I checked in with her halfway through the 10 days to make sure she was doing okay. They will always contact you if there's any issues anywhere. Okay. And they basically say if you have no news, it's good news. Okay. And then she was flown up to us on the 10th day. I think she settled pretty quickly, to be honest, a lot quicker than I anticipated, as I mentioned.
Did Cleo get a passport or anything? Did Cleo get like a passport, or do they send you photos and all that? Well, or anything?
They do. Some people got sent photos at the animal reception centre in Qatar. We didn't get one for Cleo. And this is where we go back to everybody's, you know, when you talk about everyone on social media, they all go through the same process, but everyone's process is different.
Yep.
I think we have these expectations that if the last person had the photo of the dog, well, why didn't I? There must be something wrong.
Yep.
I tried to ignore all that and just listen to what Andre and Pets Abroad said to me. And just go, look, everything will be fine. She will be great to fly. These animals are really resilient. They deal with the situation better than we do because they don't have any concept of time. So I listened to what he said, tried not to worry, tried not to compare my situation to anyone else's. And I can't really fault quarantine because when she came out at the other end, when she flew up here, I didn't expect her to look as good as she did, actually. So I was really impressed with it all.
That's awesome.
And I'm really proud of her. I'm really proud that we've rehomed a dog, and within 14 months of rehoming a dog, I've managed to get her to fly to Australia. So
yeah, that's awesome. Good on you. Good on you, Ellie. That's good. So you guys get here. You got the dog here. You've had the removals and all that. Your very first thought when you rocked up at Queensland Airport, Brisbane Airport, what was your very first thought?
Justin said he felt like he'd come home. Okay. I've never been here before, so I didn't know. But I was just, I think I was like, it's surreal. I think I was like in a dream. You know, just, I was exhausted because we'd obviously been, it's like a full day's traveling. I was just like, yeah, wow, this is home. This is it. That was it. I just don't know. I think I was really tired, really exhausted. But then I don't think at any point I thought to myself, have I made a mistake? That didn't cross my mind, no.
It's definitely a horrible flight. All right, so you rocked up, first thoughts, Justin's like wrapped, he's thinking it's home and all that. Did any of you have jobs before you got here?
Yeah, Justin secured a job before we arrived, which was a big thing, obviously, because this then ties into proving that you've got an income to secure a rental,
yep,
and things like that. So he was, what we found was, if you try to apply for jobs like well in advance, you're just not going to get any feedback because you're just, they do prefer you to be in the country, obviously.
But, 100%. Why would you hire someone if they're 6-8 months away from getting you?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, and it probably does happen to people, but Justin didn't have that experience. So we left it till about 5 weeks before we moved out, and he was just sending off those job applications to everyone. And he got an interview before we left over Teams, and he secured a job, and he's still with that job now. And it turns out that there's quite a lot of migrants who work for that company, and they really like to employ migrants because of the work ethic, and they trust them. Some people might say, oh, they don't like to employ migrants for whatever reason, but the company Justin works for, he's really happy and he's enjoying it. And that was a big weight, to be honest, off our shoulders, because we knew we had an income coming in to pay the bills.
Okay. So, when you first got here, where did you stay?
We came straight to our house, our rental. So we used a rental finding agent from the UK. We found one of those here. They were viewing properties for us on our behalf because what we didn't want was we didn't want to spend thousands of dollars on an Airbnb to then have to move again when we phoned somewhere. And I was conscious of the dog, so I didn't want to keep moving the dog around. And to be fair, I didn't want that either. We just wanted to come to our home. And we were very fortunate. We got off the plane. We drove to Justin's new employer, his new work, because we'd send my bag. So we'd send some bags over and they got sent to his new employer. We picked those up on the way to our new house on the Gold Coast. We went to the real estate and picked up our keys for the rental. And then we were in. We came into our actual home the day we arrived.
Was that would have been the first time Justin met his employer coming off a 24-hour flight.
Yes. Yeah, we both did. Horrible. Yeah, we both met them. Yeah.
I hate seeing people when I come off the flight.
Yeah.
Did you rock up in the morning? Is it?
Yes. Yeah. We landed at, I think, 7 a.m., but then we had to go through customs. And I think we got to them about 10 a.m. by the time we drove down from Brisbane to down the highway to the Gold Coast. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's horrible. Oh, good on him. That's courageous, I reckon, rocking up to a new work, picking up some boxes and all that. Did you organise a car, Alison, as well, or just the house?
Yeah, we got a hire car, picked it up from the airport. That was pretty straightforward. All that was pretty smooth, yeah.
So you got you pretty organized. So how's the adjustment been now from, picking up, like getting here to where you are exactly now?
Yeah, it's been tough. I won't lie. I probably thought it would be easier than what it has been because I've traveled a lot in the military and I've lived in foreign countries before, but this is definitely something else. And I think the only saving grace I can set to this entire move is the fact that you guys speak English here, because I have no idea how people do it when they go to a country where they don't speak the same language, because everything is definitely different here. And that doesn't mean that I thought Australia would be the same as the UK. Not at all. But it's been a lot more challenging than I think I anticipated.
Let's be real honest here, because that's what these podcasts are about. We're not here to sell things or do anything like that. We're here to chat to people about their journey to Australia. So what, for you, what was the most challenging part of relocating?
I personally struggled to find work I think people on the other side in the UK, when they see social media, think it's to do with the visa. We're on a 491.
Full work rights.
Yeah, so we have full work rights, but we cannot live, work or study in a non-regional area, which for us is Brisbane, any postcodes around Brisbane. So that's why we chose the Gold Coast, because we did want Brisbane, but we're now on the Gold Coast.
And Alison, how close is your house to a non-regional postcode?
To be honest, in good traffic, I'd say probably about 45 minutes away.
And what work are you looking for?
So I was, I trained in the UK in health and social care, and I worked in mental health before I left. So I had the qualifications for that, but I didn't have a degree. I had a diploma in health and social care prior to leaving the UK. And then I did tons of research before I left the UK to see if I could convert my qualifications. So I'd found out that I could go to the Queensland Educational Department to convert my qualification, just make sure I had all my certificates and everything. So I knew I could do that, but I could only do it when I landed in the country. So that took quite a bit of work because I had to prepare everything. And then you have to find a justice of peace to sign it all to prove it's genuine. So you go through all these processes, and then I sent it off to the education department, and they came back to me and said that my qualification doesn't fall within their framework. So my UK qualifications actually don't mean anything in Australia. So I was utterly devastated. And then I was told when I was applying for jobs that I would have to go and do another course, which would probably cost me about another $7,000 just to get a chance at being interviewed for these roles in hospitals and GP surgeries for mental health. And I refused to do it because I'd already spent that amount of money in the UK becoming qualified. So that was really disheartening and that was tough for me. So when I talk about the visa, people think, oh, is it you can't get work because of the visa you're on? That was nothing to do with it. Yes, I was asked what type of visa I had, but it wasn't about the number. It was about whether I had full work rights or not, as you mentioned before, Wes.
Yeah, 491 full work rights. But yours is a technicality where, like, we did an upskilling podcast with Paul, and people don't understand. You know, you're a perfect example again, Alison, on this, because you don't know what you don't know. Did you feel that when you arrived in Australia, it would just be a normal transition to get your qualifications transferred to the Australian qualifications?
Yeah. And when I contacted the Queensland Educational Department, because that's another thing people need to be aware of, is there is an Australian department, but every state's got their own version. So I had to get referred to them. And then when I went to them, they said, yeah, you just contact us when you get here, fill out the form and send it off. There was no access to any framework like database for me to cross check if my qualifications would match before I left. Because if, like you've just said, what you don't know, you don't know. And if I knew then what I know now, I probably wouldn't have got those qualifications in the UK. I probably would have waited till I got here.
So Alison, you got those qualifications specifically from to do this career in Australia?
Well, it was what I was going to do when I left the army anyway, because I was going to go to university to train to be a mental health social worker in the UK. But Jenny explained when we met you in 2018 that if I was to do that degree in the UK now, because your education system here is different, you do a 4-year degree here. They only do 3 years in the UK. So yep. If I'd have done a 3-year degree in the UK and then waited to get our visa, I still would have needed 2 years experience on top of that to make it transferable here,
yep.
Which then would have taken us over the cutoff age of 45. So that wasn't even an option for me. So I already had my diploma to get into my A-levels to get into university in the UK, which I think can still allow me to get into university here in Australia. However, I can't study in Australia as a resident until our visa is converted to PR in 3 years' time. Correct. So it's lots of hurdles, Wes, lots of hurdles. And I just felt that I was coming up against hurdles every time.
So you were trying to get into a particular industry. So what work are you doing now?
Well, I actually now work for the Animal Welfare League Queensland, and yep. I support individuals who are hospitalised with physical and mental illness looking after their pets.
So oh, nice.
I do something totally different now.
And do you like it?
Yeah, I love it. I love animals. You know, I have my own dog. I absolutely love animals. And I actually started off working there as a manager in the reception of the veterinary clinic. I was the manager of the veterinary clinic. Because that's my previous experience from the military as a manager. But then I found that I was working longer hours there than what I did in the UK, and that was not the reason we came to Australia.
All right.
So I transferred role within the organisation, and that's what I do now, yeah.
And how long have you been doing that role for?
Been there 3 months.
Okay. So you've got settled. Justin's still working at the place that he started with. What else has been challenging?
So little things like this is really interesting now, because you'll know this and you'll see it from Facebook and other social media sites. People always talk about everything up until the point they get on the plane. And then they talk about landing, and then they show pictures of beaches and life by the pool and barbecues, which is life here in Australia, you know, socially and things like that. People don't tend to talk about the finer details of learning an entirely new life in Australia. And an example is we found out that we came here at the time when we had to submit a tax return. You know, in the UK, you don't have to do that. If you are just employed by a company, your tax is automatically done for you.
Yeah.
So we did know that we'd need to get a tax accountant to help us with this, because a tax accountant isn't a luxury really in Australia. It's the norm, isn't it? Everyone has a tax accountant to help them with their taxes because the system is so complex. What we didn't realise, Wes, was that all our income in the UK, including my military pension, would be taxable in Australia. So we are already declaring that in the UK as part of our tax returns in the UK, but we have to declare it here as well. And I didn't realise that they were going to take so much money off me from my military pension.
So how does it work for you renting a property as well?
Yeah, so we have to declare that, which we, you know, we didn't come to Australia thinking everything was going to be tax-free. Far from it. You know, we want to make sure we're doing the right thing and we're declaring our taxes. But we knew we would be declaring it in the UK, and people talk about a tax treaty. And yes, that is true, but it's a lot more complex than that. So we employed a highly recommended tax accountant from other Brits here on the Gold Coast, recommended a tax accountant who deals with both Australian and UK tax. She gave us guidance and did our tax returns for us. And you do have to declare all your income from the UK, including your house rental, any savings and investments you have. You have to literally declare everything. And then it gets offset at the end of the year. And then you'll obviously do your tax returns for the UK at a different time. So it's quite complex. And I think the only thing I can recommend is get a very good tax accountant who understands both Australian and UK tax.
Yeah, for sure. I've got a good one. It definitely helps. There's other things too. I know that quite a few people have sold properties and then transferred the money over to Australia, then gone and been set up for the purpose of tax after they've transferred their money.
Yeah.
Therefore, that they start their tax from when they set their tax file number up as well.
Yes.
Speak to the professionals on that one.
Yeah.
All right. What else has been challenging?
Then we found out that it's pretty standard in Australia to have pest control done, whereas in the UK, pest control just happens when you need it.
That could be a Queensland thing. What pests have you got?
Right, so cane toads in the garden, huntsmen, spiders, lots of other frogs. What else? What else have we had? Yeah, lots of different types of spiders. Our neighbours had rats at one point.
Oh, wow.
But then they were pretty chilled out about it, to be fair. I said, I think you have rats in your garden. Yeah, yeah, it's cool. Yeah, no worries, mate. And I was like, no.
Have they got fruit trees or something? No.
I said, we live where there's bush behind our house. And I've been told that if there's rats, there's going to be snakes. Now, we have lots of poisonous snakes here in Queensland. And then they just said to me, yeah, don't worry about it. I'm a snake catcher. I went, thanks. That's not very reassuring. I'd just rather you get rid of the rats. Thank you. But by all accounts, when I tell people at work, people just laugh at me because they're like, well, welcome to Australia. This is normal.
It's a to me, that's a Queensland. Like one time my son found a tiny, tiny little mouse in our pool, being dressed as Count Dracula, which was hilarious. But where we are in Vic, we've got no frogs. We might get like a little green frog, but no cane toads. I guess you must be a bit anxious though, because as you say, the snakes eat rats, and your rats are next door. Are you on a decent? Are you on like the house that you're in the UK in? Is the house in Queensland bigger, smaller, easy to use? What's a preferred house?
So it's bigger than the UK, which it's one story. It's a one story detached house with a garden all around it. We did want a swimming pool, but then we didn't get the house we wanted when we went for the rental. And there is still a challenge with housing at the moment here, trying to find housing with the rental crisis. There is still issues with trying to find housing for people. We're not that bothered about the swimming pool because it's just an extra expense and we probably wouldn't use it that often. But everyone's different. They want different needs. We have the biggest bonus we have, which we're really pleased about in the house, which I recommend people do have, is air conditioning in Queensland for sure. Get air conditioning, and we have solar power, which is amazing because that provides all our power during the daytime. Because it's mainly sunny in Queensland most of the time, which is really helpful. We're on a suburb called Helensvale, which has all the facilities. It's got a big shopping centre. It's got the schools. It's got a local swimming pool, the outdoor swimming pool, golf course. It's got everything. We've got good transport links near our house with the G-Link tram to the centre of the Gold Coast. We've got the main railway line here as well, which takes you up to the airport and to Brisbane. So we're right near the motorway. So if we need to get on for Justin, he gets onto the M1 and commutes to do his work, no problems at all. So we're really happy where we are in the house.
Yeah, that's awesome. Lisa, if you want to jump into the podcast, that'd be great. And while Lisa's jumping in, Alison, what's been the best part? What do you think is the best part of moving to Australia? The best thing?
The weather. The weather for me personally. And I know people say don't just move to Australia for the weather, but the biggest thing I've noticed is for me and my mental health, the weather here makes a massive difference to everything. Because we're quite outdoorsy people. We like camping, we like walking, we like doing things outdoors and cycling. That was restricted in the UK massively because of the weather. And here, that, you know, we don't need to, that's just not an issue now. Yeah, we know it's going to get very hot, but we adjust and we adapt to that like all the other people in Queensland do. But yeah, the weather for sure has made a massive difference to our life.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty good, isn't it? Like, I mean, that's one of the main things that most people think about Australia is the weather. I think it definitely makes a difference when, you know, where I'm based in Melbourne, unfortunately, it can get beautiful. Like, today's an amazing day. It's blue skies everywhere. It's probably early 20s. But the start of the week, it was like low 20s and it was just cloudy all the time.
Yep.
And whatever, you know, when you go to Queensland, I think have you sat through one of your storms yet? You've been around for one of your big storms?
No, we had one. I must admit, I think since we've been here in the 6 months, we've probably had about 3 or 4 days rain, heavy rain, which is a bit strange. And then you get used to the fact that after it rains, it becomes super humid. So there's that. And then we've had the thunder and the lightning, but I don't think that's one of the storms you're probably referring to. So no. we're probably gonna get used to that soon. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm talking about the storms where you get like hailstones the size of golf balls and everyone's cars are smashed up.
We were talking about that at work yesterday and they said you'll get lots of warning apparently on the radio and the news. And then they just said, yeah, make sure you put your car in the garage just to protect the roof. So these are the things that people don't really talk about and that you do need to know.
You start living here, you just get used to it. It's our lifestyle, isn't it?
Totally different life.
Park undercover.
Yeah.
You learn the hard way, Alison. If you don't, the car will learn the hard way, that's for sure. And you mentioned your work colleagues and everything. Like people, obviously you have quite a strong accent. We touched base at that at the start of the podcast. Yep. But let's be honest, there's English, Irish, there's migrants. You know, Australia's very, it's got lots of migrants, hasn't it?
Yes. Yep. I think I have probably come across more migrants, as in POMs, British people, than Australian in my time here, for sure, in my short time here. And interestingly, you mentioned that about the accent. When I first met people, you'd hear people with a sort of Australian accent, but as soon as they heard me speak, they reverted back to their British accent. It was really strange. I was like, you don't even sound Australian. Oh, no, I'm from London or I'm from Essex or wherever. And I'm like, oh, right. So, we've met a lot of them here. There is a lot here.
Did you go to any of the out down in the centre meetups? Have you been to any of them?
No, because I think Tanya held one just before we arrived, which we missed that one. And then they've just had one on the Sunshine Coast, which is a fair way from us, actually. So we would like to have gone, but we haven't been to that one. So we're hoping that Tanya organises another Queensland meetup soon, and we'd definitely go to that.
Yeah, or if not, just put one up in the Goldie if you want. Like we can arrange that. That's fine. But the last two times that Tanya's done it, Alison, it's poured down with rain.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, it's like all these British bringing the rain on this, you know, on these things. So, Lisa, are you with us?
I am. Hi, guys.
Lisa. So, Lisa, just you've got a few questions you want to ask. Fire away.
Just sort of backtracking a bit. I know Wes sort of touched on your, like, first day and what you did. how about your first sort of few weeks or first couple of months, really?
Yeah, so the first few weeks were really busy, probably like many people when they arrive. You know, you're trying to get everything sorted, and I'm quite an impatient person where Justin's super laid back. He's just like, yeah, very Australian, just, yeah, well, you know, too easy, mate. And I'm like, no, we've got to get all this stuff sorted. I need to get things sorted, ready to go to work, because what I didn't want was, I didn't want us to have to sort things out in the house and then try and do it whilst we're trying to find work or be in work. So the first few weeks we were buying furniture. We were very, we planned very well with regards to our removals. We sent our removals well before we left because we wanted it to be here when we arrived, which did happen. So our removals arrived the week we arrived. So that made home feel like, well, our house feel like a home really, which I think is a massive difference. We had familiar things around us where we didn't know anyone, but we had our familiar items, which made us feel a bit more at home. And then it was quite good in a sense for the first couple of weeks where we were driving around the area, buying furniture and doing things like sorting Medicare out, going to the transport office to get a driving license, and just all these pretty boring, normal life tasks you have to do. But that then allowed us to go and see places and know where places are and find out things. So it was pretty crazy, and we wanted to be settled, one, before work, and two, before the dog arrived, because we didn't want her coming into the house when it was upside down as well. So yeah, it was pretty crazy, bit of a blur. But yeah, you've just got to do it, haven't you? You're in a position where you've got no choice. You've just got to get on with it and get set up, really.
Yeah, there's lots and lots of things to do, and it can also feel a bit like a sort of holiday to begin with as well. Did you feel like that?
Yeah.
And have you got over that yet?
That was my favorite part. I love that part when I first arrived. It was so hard. It was in the pandemic, but geez, it felt like a holiday, just the nice weather, and you can just kick back and you own nothing. You've got no control over nothing. You've got that little bit of freedom in your life for a bit. I enjoyed that part.
Yeah, that's great. And do you still feel like that, Alison? Because you've only been here for 6 months. Are you still a bit like in holiday mode?
To be honest, I've never really... I can see where Wes is coming from, because there were times when it was surreal. We'd go down to Burley and sit by the beach at Burley Heads, and you're just like... And we'd watch the whales swimming past, and you'd be like, this is surreal. This is really surreal. Mm-hmm. And this is on our doorstep type thing. But as I mentioned, it's been quite challenging for us in the past few months because the dog hasn't been well. But that's life. That is life. That could have happened anywhere. But I think now that I'm settling in my job and I'm meeting people and getting to know my job and things are starting to settle down, things are becoming easier for sure. But I understand that, as we've already said, everyone's process is different and some people may settle sooner. It's just took a bit longer for me, I think.
Obviously you're happy though, Alison, here. Would you ever consider moving home or anything like that?
No, there's definitely not. That is home for us is where we are. And we left the UK because we couldn't see our future there anymore. We didn't have a bad life in the UK. We were quite happy. We lived down by the sea in the UK in a nice area. We both had jobs, you know, our family and friends. We had the social circle. We just couldn't enjoy our life in the UK anymore because we like to travel. We like the warmer weather. We like being outdoors, and the UK doesn't offer that. And it's life is hard in the UK. We've noticed that a lot different here because you get paid a lot better here. You know, the standard of living here seems a lot better. You'll hear people talk about they have extra disposable income at the end of the month. Yes, things are going up in price here, but it is definitely a better quality of life here for sure. And the one thing I've noticed more than anything is we have far more opportunities here in Australia to do things and see things than we ever would have in the UK. So, no, I think if anything, we just want to explore Australia, and I'm itching to go and explore it. But I understand it doesn't all happen.
Whereabouts do you want to explore, Alison?
well, everywhere, really. Just yeah. Been serious. Yeah. So we'd love to drive around the entire coastline of Australia. You know, the route, there's a route that people do around the entire country. I think it can take like a year or something. It's huge. Where we'd just go around the entire country in a camper van and just explore it all, really.
Just with that, Alison, I mean, it took me just under 3.5 years, but I stayed in lots of places for a long time. So that's a little bit irrelevant.
Yeah.
It's the best thing you'll do. You'll find lots of people do it when you're sort of retirement stage as well.
Yeah.
I know that's probably a while away, but make sure you are like you got your superannuation or your pension and everything like that. People, I know it's a bit of an Australian way to sort of save your pension up and everything. And once you get access to your super, that's when you'll see lots of people cruise around Oz. So good. Like this, where you are, actually, in the Gold Coast, I get jealous of the Gold Coast. There's good surf there. You've got beautiful places close by as well. But you've also got if you could also drive down south as well, sort of swing past New South Wales, go past northern New South Wales. And sort of make your way down, like even as far as Foster, before you get to Sydney. There's some great places for you to see. Lisa, you just came back from Sydney from the weekend, correct?
Yep, I did. And I was chatting to Alison before we recorded and gave her some good tips of some places to go. And I said that it was quite surprising because I've been to the Gold Coast and I didn't find Sydney any more busy than the Gold Coast, really. In terms of like traffic and just trying to get around places.
I think, yeah, maybe it's the perception that Sydney and the bigger cities like Brisbane are going to be really, really busy. But like you mentioned that now, that'd be interesting to see that because, yeah, it is really busy here. And people who've lived here a long time have said it's only just started to get really busy, they say, and they think it's as a consequence of the pandemic.
Mm. You will definitely enjoy Sydney. It's a great place.
I can't wait to go. Yeah.
And so do you like beaches? Is that kind of what you like to do on your time off?
Yeah, Gold Coast is quite beachy. We love the beach. And it's great because we can take the dog down to the beach here. When she could walk, we took her down to the beach, which the difference here is we live near a beach in the UK, but we avoided it in the UK in the summer because it would be absolutely packed. You just wouldn't go near the beach in the UK in the summer because it was so busy. But here it's different because it's part of your normal life. This is normal life here. So the beaches, you know, there's that many of them. They're never like packed. So we could go down to past Surfers down to Burley and you could just be strolling along the beach and there's hardly anyone there and it's amazing. Yeah, it's just like, wow.
You have some really, really amazing beaches there.
It's cool.
And just like, do you find yourself still comparing things to the UK right now?
Yeah. So I was going to mention this because this is interesting. Because I talk to people a lot who've lived here a while, like a lot of migrants who've lived here a while about how long it took them to settle down, how long to make friends, how long to get used to things. And they all say it can take easily a year minimum to just feel like you're settling in. Some people say it can take a lot longer. And one person said to me yesterday this exact question. She said the one thing that I found some people were doing, which made a big difference to how they settled, was they were constantly comparing things to the UK. And it's incomparable. Like we said, the only thing that's similar is the language. I did initially when I went shopping, especially with the money. But now, once you get settled in and you get into a routine of your work and you've settled into things and life is just life moving on, you sort of just gently detach away from that and just start to live life here. So I suppose it's really natural for people to do that. But I think my colleague at work said that's one big thing you've got to try and get away from is you can't keep comparing it to the UK because it isn't the UK and it never will be. So, you know, just move away from that.
Yeah, your colleague is 100% right there because I think that once you stop doing that, you settle. I found that myself. I think it took me about 2.5 years to even 3 years because it's like building up the kind of routines as a family as well.
Yeah.
And just getting to know where to go at certain times, where to avoid when it's busy, what to buy in the supermarkets and stuff. It takes a few years and a few seasons to go through to be able to do that, to the point where it just becomes second nature. So I do get what your colleague's saying, and that's a good tip for people to just, it is natural to come over and just start to think, oh, well, the food's not like this and the money's like this and the weather's like this and stuff, and start when they have their like summer in England to be jealous because it's winter here and vice versa and stuff. But that's just life.
Yes.
That's how it is.
It takes time. And that's the biggest thing. It is, you know, I think how can I put this? It is stressful getting to the plane. It is super stressful getting to the plane to get out here, to get here. Or you can make it as easy or as stressful as you want. It is stressful, bottom line. You are moving your entire life to the other side of the world in a different time zone, which is massive compared to where your support network is in the UK or wherever it might be. It is huge. But the work doesn't just stop when you get on the plane. There is still a lot of hard work to do when you get here. And I think it's just accepting this is an entirely different culture, an entirely different life, and it will take time. And everyone's time frame of how it settles in is very different. But I think in the main, most people have said a minimum of a year easily. And you've just said, Lisa, you know, up to 2 to 3 years. And it's reassuring to hear you say that, because there are times when you think, is this how it's really going to be here? And then you realise you have the good days and then you have the bad days. But as you said, that's life. That would happen anywhere. It's just you're adjusting to an entirely new life. It is effectively everything new. Everything is new.
Yeah, and things still go on back in England. So, you know, people get married, your best friend gets married, your sister has a baby and you don't see your nephew and all that kind of stuff. And that becomes difficult. But how have you had things like that happen? How did your family and friends kind of take things?
So they've always known, Justin and I are fortunate, as we said, this has always been like one of our lifelong dreams. It wasn't just a thought of let's move to Australia and see what happens. This has always been a lifelong thing for both of us. So we're quite fortunate. So our families knew that this was always something that was possibly on the horizon. My mum didn't take it very well, even though she knew it was always what I wanted. But because we started this process so long ago and then the pandemic got in the way, they had time to adjust. But I think secretly they all probably thought that we'd change our mind during that time. But we didn't. It was always happening. We never wavered once on our determination to get here. But they had that extra time to adjust to the fact that we were going, which probably gave them, you know, the extra time to think about it. And we just reassured them that we'll still probably speak to them. If anything, we speak to our friends and family more now than I ever did in the UK, because we didn't live near our family anywhere. And we always used to FaceTime them. So we do the exact same thing here. We have a portal on the TV where we can video call through the television. And I speak to my mum every week. I speak to my friends most of the time. And I think that's one of the easiest things we've found is being able to communicate with people on the other side of the world nowadays is so much easier, and we speak to them quite a lot. I think the only challenging thing is there might be times in my work day or in the daytime where I think I want to chat to my friend or my mum, but I can't because it's in the middle of the night there. But that's just us getting used to the time difference, really. But talking to friends and family back in the UK is probably easier now than it's ever been for people on the other side of the world.
Yeah, you talk about being settled. I reckon it's like now being part of the footy club and a few of the other clubs and with the kids and all that, all their activities, it's definitely one way to sort of engage within the community and feel well. Like being an Aussie but being away for so long, and being in a community which I've never been in before. We're nearly 2 years and this is definitely home for us. I wouldn't even move my house. I love it here. But Alison, thank you so much for taking the time to share your journey with us. And we might come back in 6 months and see how you're sort of getting on. Has Justin got a nickname? Are they starting to call him Gibbo or anything like that at work? Or Has he picked up any nicknames yet?
He gets Pommy quite a lot.
Does he?
Yes.
He would love it, wouldn't he?
They call it, yeah. Well, he probably gets called lots of things, but no, he's fitting in quite well with all that sort of stuff. And I think one thing to say is everyone has been so welcoming, you know, really welcoming and really friendly, especially where he works, because I think majority of them are migrants as well. And they always did say to us, we know what you've been through. We've been there. You know, so if you ever need anything, just ask. And I must admit, I'm quite overwhelmed with how helpful people are at work and how just people are really helpful. They don't want to see you struggling. They just want to help. And everyone's just really chilled out and laid back about it all.
Sorry, Alison, I was going to say, as a culture, I actually believe that Australians want people to do good. They actually want people to do well. You want your friends and family to do well.
Like, yes.
Why not?
It's not, you don't feel the pressure here of the competition. It is just, everyone's just really chilled out and everyone wants to help you. And I think that's the key thing for people in our position or are about to come out to Australia is remember that you might not have your support network near you in here from the UK. They always are at the end of the phone. But don't struggle here on your own. There are definitely people who want to support you and want to help you. And don't be afraid to ask for help. I think the British as a culture, it's like they stiff upper lip. No, we can do this on our own type thing. No, there's, you know, there are people who do want to help you. And I've been overwhelmed with some of the help I got when I went to work because I've started an entirely new job where I didn't know anything. And people have just been so, so helpful.
Yeah, it's good. That's why the meetups we have are really good, I feel, too. I've get quite a few nice messages from people saying, you know, thanks for arranging that. I absolutely do nothing at all to arrange it. Our relocation team, Lisa and her team, do all that. But anyway, it's nice to take the credit, Alison, for all that. But some people send you the nicest messages saying, thank you so much. We were struggling. Maybe the kids was a little bit down and having the meetup helped. So, but listeners, a big, massive thank you to Alison and Lisa, as always, for putting these podcasts together. A lot goes into these podcasts. We're not a media company. We're a migration business. And Lisa, you are doing an awesome job putting these podcasts together and all of that. And Alison, thanks again for joining us. So guys, tune into the next podcast. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you. Bye.